All right, let's go to the phone line where we've got a very hot-tempered former professor of Wordonomics. We've got Mr. Stephen Hines, otherwise known as the ESG Doubting Thomas. And I'll tell you what, he's one of those guys that sits on the left side of your shoulder, sitting there, and he's not telling you things to say. He's poking you in the front and in the back, and he says, "Do I got your attention now?" And then he rams this news story down your throat and says, "Read this, pal." How you doing?
Well, there was another story today, by the way, that fits into that category, Jason.
Well, I thought it's about time to bring you back since I got an email and a text from you that had my ESG column attached to it where you said, "Bullocks, I call balderdash." So, all right. So glad to have you back. You know, you've been one of those guys that's been really testing the ESG formula, the ESG template. You've been one of those guys that's been there for years now saying, "Hey, I'm not Chicken Little here, but this ESG ain't what it's cracked up to be."
Well, exactly, Jason. I mean, until they figure out a way to measure and verify energy, social, and governmental, you know, how do you measure those things? I mean, so I am in favor of the idea, but as far as quantifying it, I mean, to this day, ESG is being used to sell mutual funds and big business and big government on the value of ESG without proving that it has any value at all.
I can tell you, 2 years ago, I was in Gillette, Wyoming, and I was doing an ESG talk, okay? And I bet there was maybe 25 people in this room, and that's it. But the governor of Wyoming, he sent someone to come and watch because they wanted to know more about the ESG. So I do want to give the governor, Mark Gordon, props for sending somebody. And then he came by later, the governor did, to the conference, and we talked and we interviewed and had a good discussion. But I do want to point out that the governor of Wyoming did send someone to be informed on an ESG discussion happening in his state 2 years ago. So
it wasn't in the news, so God bless him for that.
Right, right. And so my point of the story is 2 years ago, I was putting up Continental Resources, Marathon, Phillips 66. I mean, these are companies that are doing business in the Rocky Mountain region, right? I put their ESG score up. And I said, "Can you believe the audacity of Yahoo Finance?" Because it was on Yahoo Finance, which is one of the 60-some places I found ESG scores. But my point wasn't to say, "Hey, look at this awful ESG score that this oil company has." It was that, guys, this is already happening. And the audacity of a company to put out an ESG score that directly impacts whether people invest with that company or not before there are rules in place is not only beyond arrogant, but it should scare the living crap out of you as an industry. And nobody cares.
Well, greenwashing, you know, spell green with a capital G, but it's greenwashing, you know, it's just another form. It's been another form of greenwashing.
And you see how they're doing this, right? They're leading with the environment. And the irony is I really, truly believe the oil and gas industry is the leader in the environmental movement. I really believe that. I do.
I do, too. Except they don't seem to notice it and don't seem to understand that they have to get a more balanced view and they have to get a buy-in for people like you and me, but they have to get a buy-in from people who really feel a sense of fiduciary responsibility for their shareholders and for their investors.
So getting back to the ESG column I just wrote, the tectonic shift in ESG.
I liked it.
I got a little wordy, but that's okay. You know, every now and then you do an article sometimes for you, and that article was for me. I wanted to have some fun with the wordsmithing and the language, and, because oil and gas, it's hard to have fun in writing sometimes.
Well, you're a wordsmith. You know, it's hard to just be, you know, forced to just talk about the dry subject matter, then adding a little flair and a little understanding of how to talk about it.
So as a former beatnik, well, I don't know if you were a beatnik, but you were a former poet back in the day and back when you went
I'm an aging flower child, so I was a flower child.
Columbia University came out of the communication industry and into the oil and gas industry. Is that fair?
That's very fair.
Okay, so you were part of that big telecommunications, AT&T, Time Warner.
Time Warner, yes. AOL, back when that really meant something.
That's what it was. So that I wanted to bring that up for number one, that you were part of the paradigm shift that happened in the communications world, because right now we've got a paradigm shift about done in oil and gas. We are about done with the paradigm shift and into the new normal, and the ESG is the final piece of the puzzle for this new normal, because it is another mechanism of control in a lot of subjective ways. And
excuse me for saying this, but it's like dry humping the subject, you know?
And it's sad to say, I know what you mean by that. That's sad to, you know, that's a terrible narrative of my life. I get it, but that's okay.
Well, so, you're not alone, kid.
Let's talk about some of the things that you disagreed with, or even if you did agree with anything, in the tectonic shift. So when I say tectonic shift, I wanted to point out the language that's being used in ESG, because I tried to point this out to the oil and gas industry in 2016 when I started noticing the language was working against the oil and gas industry the same way the tobacco industry went against their wordsmith police. I've been saying this for a while. This is no different than what happened to the tobacco industry and the oil and gas, and then the coal industry next, and now the oil and gas industry. Go ahead.
If you really look at it, while the oil and gas industry should be highlighting Mark Mills, a guy who you've interviewed from the Manhattan Institute, has a new book called The Cloud Revolution, How the Convergence of New Technologies Will Unleash the Next Economic Boom, and a Roaring 220. Now, the problem with the, as far as from my position, is that the oil and gas has been slowly integrating the new emerging technologies into their business, but they really don't know how to talk about the integration between technology and what they're doing. So they're talking with yesterday's language, and frankly, you and I are talking about the cloud revolution for the oil and gas industry.
I'll go a step further. You brought up a great point. They are integrating their technologies, and they're talking about telling their story. So they're still going to meetings, going to golf events, going to social networking events, talking about
that's country club. Railed against country club thinking, and that's just another example of country club thinking. Jason.
No, I get it. It's country club economics. It used to be good old boy economics, and then it was frat boy economics, and then the sororities came in because females got power. So now we call it country club economics. But really, call it whatever it is. You've been to the meetings. I've been to the meetings for 2 years. 3 years now, they've been talking about how they need to tell their story more, and even go back for 10 years, you and I have known each other. They've been even talking about it then. So really, they've been telling their same story within the same people, and that group keeps getting smaller and smaller because the industry keeps losing people.
Well, and think of it this way, as far as this is the way I see it. I've been saying this before, this is... as Mark Mills said, the cloud revolution. Said a different way, it is the internet of high-speed internet of everything. This is the integration between energy, between oil and gas producers, renewables. But everybody's been fighting over their little piece of space on this, Jason. You know, look at renewables, for example. If solar and wind had cooperated with each other instead of fighting for the same chunk of business and competing against each other, it would have been a much more cooperative opportunity for them to talk about the broad subject, not just solar or not just wind. You know, it's until the oil and gas industry realizes they have to be cooperative and their market and the people who are interested are larger than just the oil and gas industry now.
Okay, so how can they do it? I mean, I look at what we've done. I look at what we've done for 10 years, and we've grown. We've grown every month for 10 years. That means.
Well, and you've done a fabulous job, Jill. I don't mean to blow smoke up your butt, but.
But I do want to point that out, that our crude, the crude life, we're not hiding who we are. We've never tried. We've never changed our name to energy this. We've I mean, think about it. So many of these oil companies, chemical companies, these different companies within the oil and gas industry, they've had to change their name. Environmental, chemical, all these different things. Nuvera's changed their name so many times, I don't even know who they are anymore.
But that doesn't work. You know, I mean, you know, as I like to say, her name was McGill.
But it does work.
But everybody knew her as Nancy.
It does work because no matter what, they get bailed out. They get bailed out, so they just keep going. So my point is,
They stay alive, but I don't see them advancing their company opportunities into other areas. So,
I disagree. You know, I take a look at several operators in the Bakken. They've filed bankruptcy at least twice in the last 10 years that I know about. And they're still giving large checks to the same nonprofits, to the same executives. How is it? I've always wondered this. How is it that you can give executives a bonus after they drive you into bankruptcy? Well, to me, that says they're doing their job.
It's more a financial device or a Wall Street device.
Or whatever. We've gotten to the point now where the ESG and the ABC and the acronym this, it's part of the shell game now, man. It's part of the shell game to where bankruptcy is part of it. They actually have executive teams that go in and they're designed to bring people through bankruptcy. That's an actual frickin' sought after profession.
A strategy.
Right.
It's
That's
a strategy.
What I'm saying. So how is it that me or you or Sterling, you've met Sterling from Saudi Arabia, who's a North Dakota resident. He didn't get any COVID support money. He's still waiting for his check. Okay. How is it that all these big companies with all these vast resources, they have to go after the single mother working two jobs for more money just so they can continue to have their nice catered meal to talk about? You know, we should really do a story about all the good we do.
Well, I think we should. But you know, if you're saying this is a financial beauty contest, you're absolutely right. Let me give you an example of how credibility is slowly drying up, and that is for the NGOs right now. And excuse me, Sierra Club and NRDC, because I was a member of both of you, and EDF, et cetera.
Now, what's an NGO?
They're running out of gas right now, Jason. They have pretended to be in favor of the little guy and the environment, and the truth is they've spent billions of dollars making sure that nobody builds any new energy or communication or advances. They've spent money keeping them from doing it. How can you make money off making sure that nothing gets built or nothing gets developed. It just doesn't make any sense, Jason. But their rule of appearing to be Mother Teresa is over. They are on both sides of the wind discussion, both as far as landowners and then as far as the industry of wind. So, I mean, the hypocrisy is starting to emerge. That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. I don't see it. I see that the message that Greta Thunberg and the Sierra Club, they took over because humans have been decarbonizing for 150 years, long before the Sierra Club and Greta Thunberg came along, and they hijacked the message and are now the spokespeople. So I disagree.
You and I agree on that point. I mean, to me, it's saying the same thing I am, but in a different way.
I'll go back a couple steps more. I think they've just gotten stronger and they've added more pieces that they've gotten so saturated now because there's so many groups like them that, and they're getting funded, by the way, by the government left and right. So,
well, the grants and the
agencies. Yes, absolutely. Yes. If you're under 30 and you want to go after oil and gas, the government will give you money.
Well, but if you want to go after, yes, if you want to provide education on the evolution of oil and gas, you can't raise any money anymore. That's why I call it a beauty contest. Even the federal government is slowly but surely embarrassing themselves. Have you noticed, for example, how the current White House is slowly but surely taking over control of the EPA sensibility, the FERC sensibility, Department of Energy sensibility, the FCC, the FTC. But those things are, guys like you and me are going to call them out, and we're going to embarrass them in front of God and everybody.
Well, what should the oil companies do?
Because they're pretending to be one thing, and the truth is, They're nowhere near self. Ain't nothing less than self-serving and self-perpetuating, which goes for the agencies, for the federal government. It cuts across all of these things, which is what you've been talking about. This new country club emerging and cooperation between finance and Wall Street and the federal government and the private sector, that's got to end. It's got to end. It's got to be more overt and visible and stop doing it underground and thinking you're getting away with something, which we're not going to let you get away with.
I was a little surprised in the same week that there's the largest cancellation of offshore leases in the history of the United States. A couple days later, they pump out $1.15 billion of orphan well money. And
which is what you talk about in your article, which I think is a good point.
I do too. I think the orphan wells are the new sexy thing, which is positive and negative. Number one, I think it's positive that it's a new way to connect for the industry that they've never had. That this is an actual legitimate way that, Gwyneth Paltrow and Oprah and whoever the celebrities are, they can get behind this. And all of a sudden, that's good PR for the industry. So, Curtis Shuck with the Well Done Foundation, great job partnering with Tito's Fine Spirits, Tito's Vodka. You can't go into an Applebee's in America without seeing a Tito's sign. That's awesome. Fantastic. Outside the industry. Good thinking. Now, that's number one. The second part is that the money for the abandoned wells is kind of, I look at it like a severance package. I look at it like this is a way for them to keep the industry, give them some work so they don't give them the pink slip, so to speak. They don't end it overnight. They'll give them a couple years to go plug some abandoned wells and put pics up on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and feel good about themselves while they go find another job, blah, blah, blah. Because like I put in my article, last time I checked, approving leases, continues drilling, taxes, small business stability, whereas plugging wells plugs wells.
Which is the point you make. But let me give you, you and I agree on so much, so I just want to give you a counter argument to your suggestion that, filling old mines, and the contradistinction between filling old mines and ending oil and gas leases. Let me give you a counter argument. Robert Bryce, who you know, recently published a piece where he points out that 317 wind turbine projects have been prevented from happening by local, regional, and national groups, and sometimes even Sierra Club. So in some ways, and yet, on the other hand, this whole notion that offshore drilling is going to be the answer for everything. Well, guess what's happening out there right now? The ocean scientists and environmentalists and industry, that is, you know, they're now talking about the effects of wind turbine farms and including drilling, which is has a pretty good record out there in the ocean. They are now newly arguing, wait a minute, this is, yeah, first of all, you don't get very much efficiency out of wind turbine farms out on the ocean. And second of all, have you thought about the effect on the ocean wildlife while you're doing this? So there is this, it's just a big scrum as far as I can see right now, Jason. And there's a choir of voices. I wish they would harmonize a little more than they do, because everybody's in it for their own interests.
And that's exactly right. The Sierra Club has become more of really just a business club. They're part of that country club economics, and I'd like to talk about
wind. But they don't get anything done, Jason.
Oh, they get plenty done.
They don't encourage innovation. They don't encourage upgrading technology.
That's not what they want to do. All they want to do is create a scene and create problems so people give them money. That's their business plan.
Of course.
And it's a very successful business plan. Absolutely. That's why I don't like them.
Do you have any idea how much money these groups and all kinds of environmental groups.
Real environmentalists.
How much money they receive from the government, they don't have to report that money, Jason.
I know.
That's effectively dark money.
So real environmentalists like me, people who go out and walk the walk and don't expect big corporate money to do it, okay? So we do not like the Sierra Club, okay? I'll give you a couple reasons why people like me, real environmentalists, do not like the Sierra Club. Number one, they're anti-American, okay? And what I mean by that is the Sierra Club is perfectly okay with wind turbines killing bald eagles. Now, the bald eagle population in the Southwest...
Well, and the oceanic wildlife and offshore,
we'll get there.
Supposed to be the new answer.
We'll get there. We're gonna start with the bald eagles because in the Southwest, the golden eagle is nearly extinct because of the wind turbines.
And that's part of the reason why.
And in 2016, President Obama, and I'm not blaming President Obama, he was the sitting president at the time, so I will blame him. But
clean power plan, baby.
He passed a law.
Clean power plan, that was Obama.
He passed a law that forbid people from suing wind turbine companies because there were so many federal lawsuits because these wind turbines were killing so many bald eagles. And it's illegal to kill a bald eagle in America. Now, so the Sierra Club and the wind turbine individuals and the activists, they don't give a crap about bald eagles because you don't hear them talk about that at all. Number two, they don't care about bats. The horde bat is attracted to the humming or the vibration of the wind turbines. So these bats are getting knocked out of the sky left and right. Now, I get it. The government doesn't care about birds, and the government no longer cares about bald eagles if they get killed by a wind turbine. If you kill one, they'll put you in jail. But if a wind turbine kills one, that is fine. So that's how the government acts with birds. They don't care about birds. Bats, they do care about.
But the story is larger than
hold
that.
Hold on. We'll get there. They do care about bats. If you go to every county, there's an economic indicator on a bat because of their pollination that they do for agriculture and pest control.
Oh, exactly.
So the Sierra Club doesn't care about agriculture. They don't care about whales. Whales. Are you kidding me?
Which is another part of the wind farms, you know, the offshore wind farms. Exactly so right.
The oil and gas industry got America off of whale energy. The Sierra Club did not. Sierra Club exactly. didn't give a crap about when we were all using whales to power our homes and we almost extinct them and started in on seals, okay? So they didn't give a crap about that. The oil and gas industry changed that. The people in the oil and gas and the coal industry changed that. The wind energy is trying to bring us back to killing whales again. These wind energy folk, I will not allow them to call me mental health. They are the ones with mental health issues. You see what I mean? They're trying to change it. They're trying to do a switcheroo.
Well, the NGOs and the government, they also don't give a crap about the humming and the other problems that people living near wind turbines, the effects that the subtle effects that it has on the people surrounding all of these developments. Another example is the solar farms, the California, et cetera. They don't give a crap about how many other birds besides the eagles get fried on their solar farms. There's so many examples of this kind of hypocrisy, Jason.
And now they're finding out. Now they're finding out these solar farms are completely changing the ecosystem of everything they're going into because you're changing you're changing the ground underneath you.
Well, and you're changing the air above you.
Yes. Yes.
You're frying the air above you.
Didn't we learn this with Yellowstone? Seriously, when we still got raw sewage being pumped out of Yellowstone, they went in and they tried to kill all the wolves. They went into the dens and killed the wolves, and they said they didn't, but they did. And then they realized the elk took over, and all of a sudden the foliage was getting eaten and almost eradicated, so they brought the wolves back. And, we have to stop playing God.
Well, first of all, not only do we have to stop playing God, we got to stop thinking we have a chance to play God. If what we're talking now is about human behavior, Jason, being a literary type, I can tell you there's nothing happening right now, including these hypocrisies, that would surprise William Shakespeare. He's been writing the imperfections and the flaws of humankind for 400 years, and he wouldn't be surprised by any of this. But that doesn't mean that good actors and people that have facts on their side can't make a difference in how this is discussed. I don't want to come after Gina McCarthy, but let me just point out, for example, Gina McCarthy. She was the agent that started the Clean Power Plan that tried to give federal government control over water and the Water Acts, water and energy in the United States, taking it out of the hands of the states. She went on to work at Harvard, where she continued the same approach. She then became the head of the NRDC, and it's the same approach. She has no economic development sense, no business sense, and now she's running the White House's environmental programs and coordinating efforts between the FCC, the FTC, Department of Energy, the EPA, and it's just wrong, Jason. It's just wrong. It couldn't be more wrong if they consciously set out to do it wrong. But it's a feel good, it's a feel good that you're complaining about and I complain about also. It's making people feel good when they should really be thinking, why isn't the Sierra Club more active in places like Asia and Africa where they can really do some good? Where they can bring people out of having less power than it takes to power a single refrigerator into some kind of modernity that allows them to enjoy some of the basic things that we couldn't live with without. You know, they expect one half of the world to go from poverty to renewables, which is... It simply is not going to happen, especially if you factor in the people they should also be going after are China, who emits over a third of all emissions in the world, Jason. And they're building more coal-burning power plants. A lot of them.
I'm a little bit afraid that we're going
to... are things to be, horrified by.
I mean, it's almost like we're going to go to war to destroy each other so we can save each other.
Well, we are going to war. I mean, whether it's overt or whether it's, just simply political. But go back to one thing that's happening right in front of our eyes, Jason. Look what's happening to the European Union right now. They have finally acknowledged that they're running out of energy. They may not be able to count on the Russians and the Nord Stream 2. They're going to have to start taking care of themselves. So what are they doing? They're starting to build coal-burning power plants. They're starting to think about natural gas. In fact, I think I told this to you. Right now, the European Union Council has now said they are identifying natural gas and nuclear as renewables. And they're not doing it just for a day or a year. They're doing it 25 or 30 years. Why? Because nobody's going to invest money in a power plant, whether it's nuclear or natural gas, if they can't get their money back.
The
American government is going to have to wake up to what's happening to place so-called thought leaders like the European Union and how they're simply starting to admit that they've been going down the wrong alley for quite a while.
I think it's time to admit that the government acting like a business does not work because they don't understand when you got to get rid of a sunk cost. And what I mean by that is the newspaper industry had a monopoly for 100 years in most towns. And within 10 years, a lot of them filed bankruptcy because they hung on to the printing press. That was, for a lot of reasons, that was a big cost.
Well, more than that, Jason.
Steve, follow me. Because
they gave away their news for free on the internet. They didn't realize the value.
Get that, Steve, but follow me for a second here because how many meetings were had for how long to hang on to the building that housed the printing press because of what you were talking about? They couldn't solve how to get people to pay for information on the internet because everybody was giving it out for free. Here was the one thing the newspaper industry had that they didn't realize they had. They had 90% of the online creation, meaning most of the internet is a reaction to what the newspapers put out because the newspapers are generally the ones creating the news. You got a couple television and radio reporters that do decent work, but primarily it's the Associated Press and the newspaper reporters.
Look at the Wall Street Journal, for example. Yeah. They're the ones who figure, they never give away their information for free.
No.
If you go back 20 years, they never gave it away for free. And of course, they're the most businesslike of newspapers.
Well, and that's why we used to tell newspapers all the time that, listen, either you got to go the free penny shopper route and try to get enough sponsors to make it work.
That's what they're living on right now.
I know. Or you got to go the big boy route, which is the Wall Street Journal route, and say, our information is so good, people pay for it. And they tried to go the both way. They tried the hybrid way, and that didn't work. It didn't work. They had to pick one way or another. We went the sponsor route, so we've been limping along. I wish we would have went the other way. the dump truck of money route.
Your intentions were noble. You've done a great job. So,
We should have went the newspaper. The newspaper route that they take a dozen sponsors and let them run the editorial board. You know what I mean? That's kind of what a lot of newspapers ended up doing. That's why their circulation went down.
But nobody reads them, but they're driving away their readership, goes back to what I was saying earlier.
That's why their circulation went down. Yes.
Mm-hmm. By the way, credibility, not only, for any, isn't science, but it isn't finances, and it isn't credibility, and it isn't information. We don't trust any of them, including their editorial boards. They have become a mouthpiece for their publication, which is not their job. The editorial board is to take a balanced, broader view of the world.
Well, let's wrap her up here. ESG, what do you think, Mr. Doubting Thomas?
You know, it's so far from being. A lot of blood's going to be on the tracks, Jason. A lot of people are going to be embarrassed, including places like BlackRock, who have been using it to acquire more investment money and using it to shame businesses. They're going to be revealed to be just another profit enterprise who has been fooling people to make more money off of it. That's what I think. They will be ashamed, and I'm going to be one of those guys right up their muffler, Jason. I have been trying to embarrass them for the last year, and more people are coming out, including a lot of the people you and I listen to. You know, the guys like Robert Bryce or Rob Bradley or Paul Dreesen or Craig Rucker, Jim Willis, Tom Shepstone, yourself, we're going to win this day.
How's old Robert Bryce doing, by the way?
He's doing fabulous. Yeah, he's testifying in front of Congress. His podcast is, if you haven't listened to his podcast lately, he is bringing in a larger and larger group of people to have discussions. So, for example, there was a guy who's a scientist who's been in the battery business for the last 30 years, mm-hmm. and now is working on a new, an advancement from the lithium battery that is now going to solve some of the renewable problems. And that is, where you're going to store it if you can't get it from the wind or from the sun. So, and he had a discussion with him. You should take a listen to him. He is, as far as I'm concerned, he's taking the broadest look and realizing that this discussion should involve more industries and more sectors, not less.
Oh, I think as far as podcasts go and energy information, to me, he's on the Mount Rushmore. He's one of them.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He is. That's a good way. That's the way I would put it myself.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And he's been, first of all, he has written, six books right now. He's done a couple of documentaries pointing out the poverty and the problems with energy poverty in half of the world right now, where little cities and towns aren't able to get enough electricity to light the downtown area of their town.
Well, all I know is that he's stayed the course for the 10 years that I've had a relationship with him. He's stayed the course. And, for a guy out of Texas who's really, he's a national guy. He's on, he testifies in front of Congress, and he's on Fox and MSNBC and all the national heads. He has done a very good job of being accessible to little old crude life. When we were just on a handful of stations up in the Bakken, he understood how important the Bakken was in the global scheme of things because of the research and the technology, because he understands science is universal, whereas politics...
But he knows a lot about the sciences that go into right. the oil and gas industry.
Whereas politics seems to be not as universal. And he's always wanted to keep science out of politics and politics out of science. So.
Well, there's an ignorance involved in this discussion that's being done in the media and politics right now. And it goes right down to the UN, Jason. If you look around, European Union, UN, United States, there's a very shallow discussion they're having right now. But that won't last because guys like you and I are talking about it, Robert Bryce, but also people who have to make economic sense out of using this product, the products that come with it. As my friend out, Ron Stein, has been writing about, wait a minute, when you talk about oil, you're only talking about gasoline or diesel. 6,000 of the integral things that modern life uses come our derivatives and feedstock from oil. Why isn't anybody talking about that right now when you're talking about reducing oil, going searching for oil when it's so important to these other things. It's just, it's not just for cars and trucks and airplanes. This is for cars, in the biggest sense of the word, how many components, medicine. I mean, it's integral to modern life, and nobody is talking about the extra values of oil.
I will say one thing as I am looking at the clock, and I got to wrap this up here, but I watched an episode of Ancient Aliens the other night.
Okay.
It was on Peacock Network. That's what it was. And it was on Hawaii, and I've been to Hawaii. And I didn't know a lot of the stuff about these underground volcanoes and some of the history with Hawaii and the people. I knew a little bit of it when I was on Maui. But anyway, I found it interesting. And, you know, a lot of these experts, they give them a title. I laughed out loud when I heard the title. Ancient astronaut. And anyway, they take the word alien out there. They call it age. Anyways, the show is fabulous in terms of just making it entertaining for the average person and all these other things. But it got me thinking because, you know, these, it's on the History Channel, so they're trying their hardest to be as science-based as possible. And it's so funny.
They're trying to use language to get young kids interested.
Yeah, but they do a good job.
Really,
they're
trying to get a new audience.
And they do a good job. They're like, you know, they're about 70% of it's science, and then they just go off the rail the last 30% into science fiction land, which is, you know, it's fun. But I get it. That's where you lose me, okay? When the reptile people come out and start having a bar mitzvah with you, no, that's the end of it for me. When it happens, I'll just accept it in real time, okay, pal?
Well, so, there's always that temptation. But, now, before I let you go...
No, hang on here. Hang on. I want to finish this thought here. So those guys have been studying this their whole life. This little panel discussion they had, and they really knew what they were talking about, and they've studied all this different stuff. Let's just say that happens. Let's just say the reptile people do come, okay? And if you don't want to listen to the alien talk, you can go to the Bible and talk about the golden calf as well. Because what's happening right now, I believe this, is with the ESG and with everything else, is this leadership that's there right now, if the aliens and the reptile people came, I don't think they would even talk to these experts. They would act like they're the experts. So that's what worries me.
They don't have enough time, Jason. Their time is too important to learn anything about these subjects.
But that's what worries me, is that all these ESG people, just like the golden calfers and the ancient aliens and everything else, the doom, whatever you want to call it, these are the people that have been trying to educate for the last 10 years. And now that society says, okay, we're going to do ESG, they are now trying to tell these experts how it goes, when these experts are going, no. I saw this happen during the organic farming, where all the organic farmers were like, that's not organic farming. And the government says, yes,
well,
it is.
And that was another one. That was a misguided, well-intentioned, misguided way of looking at the world. What would a good half of the world do without GMOs? Because they couldn't. Because we're growing more and more, we're producing more on with less.
But I mean, my point is that
old fashioned.
But why did they have to change the language? That's why they did it.
Because it serves their purpose, Jason.
Right, I know. And in fact, what I didn't write in that story is that poor hippie, he had to even go make his own bag seal that said chemical free or pesticide free or something like that, because there was a person full time, I swear to God, coming to that store every month telling him to do something different. Oh, you can't label it like that because it implies that this has hormones in it, because he'd put hormone free on his milk. Then the state would come in and say you can't do that because the big government sponsored milk company says that implies that their milk has hormones.
Let me take it one step farther. Back when, what was Rachel Carson and the whole movement against DDT. A good part of it was right, because at that time they were spraying it in classrooms and everywhere. The problem is DDT has never been replaced as a solution to mosquitoes and malaria. There are several billion people who die every year from malaria in Africa. Why? Because they can't use DDT, because either an international or national agencies say, no, you can't use DDT. But it is, it's trying to simplify the world. Let me get back to two other points. Right now, we've got a problem where we have people who know a lot about one subject or one sector, but don't know how to combine it into the global or the bigger picture. So we have a bunch of experts talking about small amounts of turf, and it doesn't really apply to the broader picture, the humanity of it all. And one last thing, as you and I have talked about, and you know, I'm a published poet. I am working on, 400 or so poems from my lifetime, a collection, if you will, spending a lot of time on it. But words are important, but they're not to be misused, as far as I'm concerned, which goes back to what you were saying, how it turns you off and turns your stomach. I think we've taken a 10-pound bag and we've put it 10 pounds of thinking in it. So that's good enough for me.
That's right. 20 pounds of potatoes in a 5-pound sack.
Exactly. That's our job. That's our function.